Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Bench Units podcast. I'm James McSorley. I'm questioning my intonation again. I said that as if it were a question. I am joined, as always, by Mark Schofield. Is that how you pronounce it?
You'll need to take yourself off mute for me to
Ha ha.
know.
Is the camera low enough that you saw me check?
Yes.
You got me.
Yeah, it depends on who you ask. It might be Schofield according to some people, but also the whole thing is stupid because why is my surname spelt like it is when no other versions of Schofield are spelt like that in the world ever?
To be fair, someone really blew it a couple of generations back in your family by the sounds of things, but also by far not the weirdest thing to have been said in a wheelchair basketball broadcast or in wheelchair basketball media, even by us. But
Or
yeah,
in the
so we're
comments
joining
section.
you in a brief moment of respite between men's and women's repêchage games granted to us by the fact that Japan is 11 hours ahead of the UK, so there aren't any games right now. So we're going to talk a little bit about the men's repêchage, and we will keep the women's stuff to a later episode. First things first, for anyone who cares about wheelchair basketball but doesn't know who qualified one, that's insane.
Little Venn diagram, right?
And two, the four teams out of eight that qualified were France, Netherlands, Germany, and Canada, leaving Italy, Morocco, Iran, and Colombia out of the Paralympics. The first four teams we mentioned will be joining. Pop quiz, Mark, who are the four teams that are already qualified for the Paralympics?
GB, Spain, USA, Australia. So we've got a full field of GB, Spain, USA, Australia, France, Netherlands, Canada, and Germany. So
That's what we just said.
is that the top eight teams in the world? Whether you think it is or not, that's what an extra level of qualification tournament has decided.
Well, that's also what Japan of, well, no, wait, no, it was Worlds that they missed out of during COVID. I forgot
World.
that they missed out in this one fair and square, right?
Yeah, they did.
Never mind then.
They did at the mainly because Iran took them out, and I think there's at least some argument to be had that the current version of Japan might have fared better than the current version of Iran did in this tournament. But
Yeah, a full Japan might have done better than a half Iran. I say half, they're missing one player, but Omid Hadi Azhar is a big miss.
yes. So yeah, we. As we talked about on the preview, I'm catching up with Obin because it's been ages since we last did like a live, not a live record, but a recording that went out at the same time, essentially, we recorded. Because we recorded the repêchage preview with Brad a little while back. We've recorded with Colin Higgins since then, which will be coming out soon.
We got some stick for doing a repassage sort of preview with someone who wasn't going to the repassage, and maybe you're all right, but
Well, you know what I say, our listeners can shut up. They're called listeners, not speakers.
yeah, why don't you start a podcast? Please don't, it'll do better than ours.
That'd be disappointing.
Everyone can eat, it's fine, but
Yeah, I mean, we haven't recorded since the Belgium tournament went down, and it feels like a lot has happened in that time. The
can we
main
just say, when you say it feels like a lot has happened in that time, it felt like France looked like one of the worst teams going to looking like the best team in the world, and then they kind of maintained it in the repêchage. And also Italy went from looking, I thought, pretty good to not great to pretty good again, and
And
then just not good enough in like a 2 week
also
period.
Colombia went from looking great to atrocious. So there's been
Colombia went from hitting shots to not hitting shots. Well, so did Italy, to be fair. Like, they beat Germany because Giulio went nuts, and then anyway, we'll get to that, but yeah.
We're gonna dive right in. So there was 3 days of seeding games, and then there was four crossover games, which would in any regular tournament set would be called quarterfinals, but they were essentially four finals, with one qualification spot each on the line.
If they were quarterfinals and the teams had to play out to win the tournament, how terrible would the basketball have been? Or do you think, out of pride, like people would have gone and tried to win it?
No. I think so, some of these teams have been in prep mode for like a month solidly. Like France and Colombia have done. France did Belgium tournament over to Albacete to play you guys and some others in friendlies, then home to host Colombia for a bunch of friendly games before traveling to Antibes.
I didn't know they played Colombia in those middle in those couple of days in the middle. I genuinely like they were playing so well in Albacete that I was like, are they gonna like have they peaked this week and not next week? And obviously you can have more than a 3 day peak, as evidenced by the fact that they looked great all week in Antibes as well.
This is my favorite little bit of intel that I don't know if it was broadcasted, is completely irrelevant now, but in one of the games where they played Colombia in friendlies, they played 40 minutes and the two teams played to a tie and they just decided not to play overtime. And it's like, oh yeah, that you're right, that winner take all 5 minutes doesn't really seem worthy of any extra attention or practice. What could possibly be the value in sinking time and effort into that ahead of the big dance? But
I
anyway,
respect it. I actually do like that a little bit. They're like, hey, we're here to figure stuff out for 40 minutes.
I think it's hilarious, but I also think the idea that the most pressurized 5 minutes of the game that you can't really replicate, you kind of get a chance to replicate it and rehearse, and you're like, now we're good.
Yeah, and also like, can my cardio go those extra 5 minutes? And like, hey, yeah, it's just I guess that make you made a good point there, where it's like, all right, can I? Like we've gotten this far. Here's the absolute most like my decisions will matter outside of a real tournament. Like this is the smallest sample size of like, hey, if I turn the ball over in these next 3 minutes, it really matters or whatever. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I just thought like it's very funny to be like, we said 40 minutes. It's very amateur basketball. We only have the sports hall till 8, fellas. Like you're
Not
like
happening.
finishing a scrimmage and the five-a-side football pensioners come in
Yeah,
to
and you
kick you out.
have to decide the thing on like a sudden death free throw shootout to see who's the winner while there's like footballs being booted against the wall.
That's got to have happened in like Spanish league or Italian league or German league or French league or whatever, where they just most people just play in sports halls or arenas that are public use, where you get to the point of a double overtime or whatever, where it's like we don't have the court booked, or maybe do people just book it for 4 hours? I don't know. Anyway, that is not relevant.
Or you have to lower the baskets in like the other orientation and you play like long ways up and down on those tiny baskets that are right against the wall with no run up.
Yes, and dies on a layup, but you figure out who won, so it's okay.
I dare say we're off topic.
Yeah, I would say. So anyway, let's get back to what really matters. Italy 89, Morocco 41. I'm joking. Yeah, Italy looked real good to st well, Italy looked real good the whole way through the group. It was kind of a way to jump off a joke that I was making to a real point.
Yeah, I mean, let's do this first. So, the way the groups shook out, we got in Group B, which is the one we'll start with B because you referenced this game first as the opening game. But Italy and Germany both beat Colombia and Morocco, and they ended up in a day three game for top of the pool. Italy were trailing that one by double digits, and then they won the fourth quarter of that game 27-8 to steal an 8-point win over Germany to top the group.
It, winning that by 8 after making the comeback is nuts. Like, no one's like, hey, we managed to come back to scrape a 1 point victory in a last second shot. It was like, no, like we were being fouled by the end of the game because we were, yeah, that's pretty wild.
Comfortably.
Did you see anything like Germany falling apart that or Italy taking it that wasn't just like Giulio didn't miss a shot for a quarter and Bezzetti hit one from the middle and Carasino, who was having, I think, a pretty poor shooting game before that, managed to.
Yeah,
I think he
so
was 9 from 20. I think he was 2 from 11 at one point.
yeah, my read on it was that fourth quarter they went to their it was with Santarelli in instead of Ahmed, and they went Papi on one wing, Filippo on one wing, Sabri in the two shooters with two lows on the block. And because Sabri was in the middle, I think Germany tripled and tried to quad once, and he got a like a not a layup, but like a very short post up out of it. And then they tripled again and left him open. He didn't drive and he hit, this was like a few plays apart, not directly one after the other, but he hit like an open free throw line or elbow shot. And I got the impression with that it spooked Germany, because if you watched all their jumps after that, they were like sending the low out, bumping the chair. And then when the pick came, they weren't forcing the ball to move or like dribble off the pick. They were just re like taking a pull back and retreating, and like Filippo especially. And Papi shot well all game, but Filippo at that point was just like waiting for them to come off him and splash him in open shots, because they were like acting as if they were jumping him. And then as soon as the threat of the pick came, they just retreated from the jump. And they basically, I think, had Bezzetti not made that one pull up from the middle, I think they probably would have not scared themselves quite so much. But I think it felt like as soon as they helped off the middle, they were in trouble. So they just stopped jumping hard
Yeah, I
and
think
basically
Santa
shot well
really.
for 10 minutes.
Yeah, they also. Yeah, you shoot that well for a full quarter. There's kind of very little you can do. So I think Santarelli, obviously, Ahmed is the man, and we're big Ahmed fans here. But I think Santarelli being, I don't even know what height he is as a 1-5, like being a big fella sitting on the block, I think that makes a difference. Obviously, Ahmed's an unbelievable finisher, but you kind of, they kept him pretty quiet. He didn't take a shot in 20 minutes. In this
Yeah,
game, I think.
Ahmed minus 14, Santarelli plus 23, something like that was the split for the game. It was
Yeah,
wild.
something like that. But no, I think that makes a difference. And just like he had a couple of, like, I say a couple, like actually just one or two, where like they'd send it inside to him, because it's a little bit more tolerable to send the ball inside to someone who's as big and as long as him. And I feel like that sort of, even just the ability to get to the block, like we'll get on to it, like, but I thought the one of the big differences when they played Canada the day after was, like, obviously it wasn't that, it wasn't, a lot of it is Papi had shot like 68% or, but yeah, 68%, and Carreño ended up shooting quite well when it mattered, but like just block position, like I feel like Canada were like, all right, cool, like Canada were just like outing Papi at one point because they were able to keep their low pointers off the blocks. And I feel like getting that, even though Santarelli is a 1-5, like getting someone that size to the block and established was kind of able to facilitate Papi getting going. And man, did he get going.
To
Just went
put it
completely
lightly,
insane. Like, might have used them all up. But no, I honestly, like, I think the point that I'm making about this game kind of came from my impression of the game the day after. But I think sort of good established block position, kind of like, I don't know, like it just, Papi had 35 on nearly 70% shooting, and then Canada the day after were able to not really jump him that aggressively, and I think that's the big difference. But unbelievable, just absolutely nuts, like.
No, I'm with you. The flip side of it was that Germany, I think once their defense was going down the pan, Germany spooked themselves. And I think it's been a few days since I watched this now, because we're obviously recording this later than was originally planned. But I think Germany is something like they only scored 2 points in the last 5 minutes of the game. So from the point at which Italy brought it back to tied, I think it was then like 11-2 for the last 5 minutes. We've seen not dissimilar from Germany before. They've been prone to unfortunate scoring droughts in big moments or whatever else, but they just, the tougher they were finding it to defend, it felt like the more their offensive composure was starting to wilt on following possession. And also Italy, especially with Santarelli out there, would just, the minutes of Haller being out there as Germany's kind of fourth guy, the size advantage isn't really there in that matchup where they can put Santarelli on him, and that felt like that happened a little bit.
Yeah, sorry, I'm just fact checking you there. Do you want to take a guess at the time on the clock when Germany made their last 2-point shot?
5 minutes, 11 seconds rings a bell.
5:22.
Okay, that was close. I'll take
That
that. That
was
was pretty good.
pretty close. Yeah, so 5:22, they scored their 63rd point.
Yeah, that was their final score, man.
That's pretty tough.
And this was kind of the weird thing about this, about the repechage, was the first 3 days being for seeding, we got these dramatic finishes. This is just one of a few that we'll get onto. And this looked catastrophic for Germany because it looked like they were going to limp their way into the final day into a tough matchup that we'll talk about in a second. And it looked like Italy were about to be riding high into a very favorable matchup, and neither of those things happened.
Nope.
Shall we, do you want to hit the other group for a bit of context at this point? Because I feel like there's more storylines coming out of Group A than there was Group B.
Yeah, last little thing. I just randomly, I was like, what did Italy do defensively? And I was just like, they were super. There was a point where it's like, maybe at the side of the court, they might all look like files. I have no idea. But there was just a load of like, I don't know. Italy just like sticking a hand in there, getting a tip to a pass, or like just taking like just steals, but like not from like intercepting passes or whatever. There was a lot of just like tip dribbles and like little loose balls and stuff that Italy came up with. And when you're chasing a game, you need all of those. But that was the sort of active hands on Italy's side of things was great. Like the scrap to get involved in that. And as I say, once again, like there might be someone listening to this who was there or who was playing wearing a German jersey who's like, yeah, we all of those were fouls, but whatever. I don't know. I'm saying that as if I know that's the case. I don't, but like you get into a game like that and you're like, you need those to go your way. If you're gonna make that comeback, like you need to, if you reach for the ball and you get a piece of a ball and you also get a bit of foot plate, you need a ref that's like, yeah, that's cool. No worries. So yeah.
Yeah,
But yeah, sorry.
especially when I think the key word for the final stretch of the game was composure, right? And Italy, for as good as they've been up and down at various points of pulling out wins in tournaments when they need them, I don't know if composure is necessarily the first word that comes to mind when you think about them.
No, it's a bit of a the I don't know, it's stereotypical. It's definitely a stereotype of like a couple of different nations from like southwestern Europe, but like fiery. Like there's a bit of there's a lot of passion involved, and that is like a hacky stereotype that is probably only true for some of them, but like
Well, I think if you go back and watch the guys' reactions after some of the made baskets in the fourth quarter, you can say it's at least true in a handful of cases. So that's good enough for me.
yeah.
Right, okay, I'm gonna throw you some storylines from this other group, and you're gonna tell me which one you want to hit first, okay?
Okay.
So, France, from awful at the repechage to best team in the world.
Awful at
Netherlands,
what?
awful at, not the repechage, sorry, awful at the Easter tournament to best team in the world at the repechage. Netherlands, from seemingly unable to score baskets at the Easter tournament to seemingly able to stop any other team scoring baskets at the
That's what I was going to correct you to if you didn't say that. Like, seemingly
repechage.
able to infect the other team with that.
And Iran, don't really know where to begin. I feel like pick your headline with those guys. And Canada, James McSorley in Pat Anderson's ear about just chilling for the seeding games and then showing up when it matters. Pick your storyline out of those four teams.
I would just like to make sure that people know that I wasn't actually in anyone's ear about doing that. I just wondered if someone would, and it turns out the team with the best player of all time, who is 44, like making sure a guy peaks at the right time, was pretty switched on. I think he played like 32 minutes a game or something, which is like
Yeah, it's not
that's
resting.
plenty. But it's interesting that they could have like, I say gone for it. Like Pat was off the floor at the end of the Iran game that they lost by a point. I guess we're just into that. So you can pick Canada or Iran based off the back of this. So it was interesting that they maybe could have pushed for that, won that game, and then ended up with a different crossover that they might have liked less.
Yeah, so this was, I posed you this question before the podcast because this has been churning around in my head. So, in terms of unlikely occurrences that took place on the final day of the seeding games, you had this bizarre Italy come back over Germany in monstrous fashion for them to top the group. You then had Iran and Canada go down to the wire in their last game, which ended up being 75-74 Iran over Canada on a last second buzzer beater by my biological son. Mohamed Hassan Sayari,
Is
but
he younger than you?
yeah, oh yeah, by like a good 3 years or so.
That's great. You currently have his haircut. No.
Yeah, thanks.
No, but also that last minute game winner by Sayari after the last 5 second game winner from Nick Onchin, after the last second game winner from, oh, who scored?
From Abedi, and that was following a layup from Jasmine, and that was following a basket by Abassi, and that was following a shot by Gonchin, following a shot by Sayari. I think there was
Hey,
six.
Mark, choose your fighter, clutch offense, or will anyone play some flipping defense? It's neither and both at all times. Like, it's just really good shot making. But I love being like, wow, that's clutch. And then immediately being like, oh, why has he let him do that?
Hey, some of those baskets made late in that game were actual easy like slips, and just making the defense overthink it, and then just like pushing back door happened at least twice there. That
Yeah,
shot.
the Abedi pre-game winner, game winner was like, hey, where do you think I'm going? One-on-one, see it. Like, and it's not like it wasn't bad, but it was just like misdirection by not doing a whole lot, being like, hey, what if I just went to
He
the hoop?
snowplowed Colin Higgins to get position on that last post up, and then on the make by Gonchin, Abedi tried to snowplow him defensively as well, and Gonchin actually didn't get an and one like he should have done.
Yeah.
And Sayari made that shot. That was actually the best defense of the entire final stretch, was
Dallaire just
kind of
on his
the
lap, big long arm in
denying
his
him the
face.
ball and putting two guys on him and waving a hand. And that fadeaway he made to win the game was utterly absurd.
Yeah,
And
it's great
ultimately,
defense. Like, Vincent Dallaire is massive.
yeah.
That's great day.
And ultimately, that made basket, combined with Germany collapsing against Italy, drew Iran Germany in the crossover game. Germany blew them out to qualify for the Paralympics. And it drew Canada and Italy, and Canada stole that one. And I think there is a reasonable chance both Iran and Italy are looking at that set of unlikely circumstances where they avoided each other, and both looking at the other one and thinking, man, we would have beaten those guys and qualified if we'd drawn that matchup. And I don't know which side I believe more.
I think it's interesting because I don't know if Italy or Canada were looking at each other being like, oh no, this is the worst thing that could have possibly happened. But just matchup wise, like, I think if you're Italy or Canada and you play predominantly bigs and ones, one fives, bigs and one fives, for Canada, well, no, 2 4 fives, 2 1 fives and a two or something. You're kind of looking at that being like, boy, I hope we don't get a team that'll just press us. And Italy certainly obviously are doing something similar. So there maybe was a nice sort of, they're not identical, obviously it's three bigs against two bigs, but it's a lot of low pointers on blocks for perimeter fours and four fives. You know what I'm saying? I wonder if there's a thing of like, oh cool, so like we've played against these sort of lineups in training. We kind of know, we know what we do, so we know what they do, and it's not identical by all means. But I wonder if they were like, oh, cool, this will do. But yeah, Iran, I wonder the whole way, Iran were still like, because we both picked them to go through, because I don't think either of us really knew about Omid not being there.
No, I quite honestly, I would have picked them even if you'd have told me he wasn't there, which would have turned out to be drastically incorrect, because not only is his production missing, but the trickle down effects of not being able to run that starting lineup, especially against some of these teams after I think the book got out on them a little bit with what we saw with them in Australia in the
Yeah.
OZ.
I think I still just did the thing with Iran that I kind of do with teams that can be dangerous in streaks, where I'm like, oh, I don't know. I still don't know if you'd want Iran. Like, they could still do something that they haven't done in 3 days yet, which is kind of fun. Like, you know, I tend to fall into that trap, but I'm like, sorry, could have just gone nuts. Like, I was talking about certain guys where I'm like, oh, he could just have 40. Like, sure. But can the rest of the league have 32?
Sayari started off by, this we'll get to the Netherlands in a minute, but the Netherlands game plan against Iran was just to push the screens out and not commit to jumping any of their shooters, which essentially means Sayari and Sayari only, because none of their other guys are hugely consistent without Hadi Azard. But Netherlands were just resolute in the fact they weren't going to jump the shooter, and Sayari made his first four shots, which I think was two long bank shots and two threes. And I was like, man, Netherlands must have been quaking at that point. But yeah, I mean, it happened for him in every game, right, where he made his first handful, and then being the only ball handler out there, their guys struggling to get really all the way to the block to make his shots easier. I think he really wore down as each game went on, and then ultimately as the week went on, as you can see with them losing to Germany by 31, like that. I think had they played Germany on day one, they would have been much more up for it, but I think they were goosed by the time it came to it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my if out of interest, if we'd had an Italy around matchup, who would you have taken? I presume you would have taken Germany over Canada.
Yeah, I think I would have.
I would.
Depends. Do we, if it gets to Italy and Iran, do we still get to base, like, do we still get to have the context of Giulio having gone berserk like less than 24 hours before? Maybe Italy then. But pre-tournament, if you were like Italy, Iran, I would have said Iran, based on the fact that I picked Iran to qualify and didn't pick Italy to qualify. But you know, yeah, I would have gone that
You
way.
beat me on predictions, though. I'll give you that. You were right 3 out of 4. I was wrong 3 out of 4.
Oh,
Although,
really? What did you, oh, what were your calls? I forget.
well, I picked Germany and Iran both, which obviously by the final day couldn't happen because they played each other.
Yeah, I had a crossover of two teams that I didn't pick, so I had the opposite. I was like, I'm wrong on one of
Oh,
these.
I had the same as well because I had France and Morocco, who I picked neither of. And then I picked Colombia, who then ultimately lost out to Netherlands, and I picked Italy, who lost out to Canada.
I just like I had a couple of people saying Colombia, and I was a bit like, maybe I just don't say it, or maybe I don't know enough about them because there's a couple of guys that don't play in the league that I watch regularly, but I just couldn't see it the whole way. Like they shot the ball really like ex like sort of exceptionally well in Belgium a little bit and scared some teams, but like I don't know the probability of that stuff happening again. I didn't back.
No, I'm with you. We found out mid-tournament that basically Colombia's entire men's team plays for Marseille in the French league, bar a handful of guys. And by the end of the repechage, when the book was kind of out on them and they were lacking in energy and shot making, it did look an awful lot like someone had thrown HSB Marseille into an international tournament. But yeah, Colombia ran out of juice. We've spoken about Iran, and I think the interesting question, we'll use this to bridge from Germany, who we've touched on a little bit.
This is all over the place. I love this so much. Like, we
I
could
come
just like
away.
miss a team that I don't care about organically, and that's
We've
great.
already skipped Morocco.
Hell yeah.
Were Germany the best team in the tournament if you take away that quarter against Italy, which I know is not really a fair assessment of anybody to discount the ones that don't fit the pattern you're trying to point out?
Yeah, if you exclude everything that I don't want to see, this is great. Like if they played this tournament out to the end without knowing what the second round of crossovers would be, do I back Germany to beat Canada, France, or the Netherlands? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I think I do as well.
How would you, maybe that's not fair. I was going to say, would you like to rank the four teams that qualified? But no,
Yeah, we'll do.
I wouldn't, so I'm not going to ask you to.
Okay, I'll go.
If that isn't this whole podcast, I don't know what is. I wouldn't ask you to do this because I wouldn't want to do it myself. Yeah, no worries. So what I think is
I would go Germany, France, Netherlands, Canada, I think would be my top four in that order. Mostly based on the fact we saw France beat both of Netherlands and Canada, and we saw Netherlands beat Canada, and we saw Germany play none of those.
yes, and we saw Germany just be proclaimed our favorite team out of the four by us, and therefore.
So yeah, that would be the logical way to approach this. Yeah, I mean, shall we talk about the fact that France squeaked their way to the top of Group A with a 1 point win over Iran, a 6 point win over Canada, a 5 point win over the Netherlands, that then bagged them a 27 point win on French national TV against Morocco. Because the French general public who happened to turn that game on must have like flicked the TV on and be like, ah, we're the best wheelchair basketball team in the world.
You'd be
What a
like,
nice surprise
France exercising dominance over Morocco.
that is.
I don't enough about that. I don't know enough about that to make any good jokes that wouldn't get me in trouble. But no, I was really impressed with France the week before their episodes when we were in Albacete, and I think they've always had a thing. I say always, like recently they've had a thing where there's like talented players in here, there, like one of them plays at this club, another one's over here, and you're kind of like, but how does it all fit together? And like two or three of their best players probably can't end up in the same lineup together. And I thought this week and last they managed to find spots for all the guys that they need to very well, which is a very abstract thing to say, but I mean, like, there's a lot of like, I don't know, like Tchouaméni is a four and Nico Schwanzer is a four or five, but and they're both like, throw them the ball, let them create, get over the halfway line, put the ball in their hands, sort of guys. And they managed to find a 4-5-4, what was it, 4-5-4-2-1-5-1 or something, or
Yes,
two five
something.
one five one.
Yes, something.
And yeah, stuff like that. That was great. And they found minutes for Sofiane and Meawi to kind of just be everywhere all the time. And their starters are three big, and I think Carlier and Remy Bale are both like massive and useful and very good basketball players. And I think we're both massive Madrid Cairo fans. First team all smooth, but I just finding little spots for everyone. Like they managed to go, and it might have been like anything would have worked or maybe not, but like plugging in. Even guys that were sort of near the bottom of the bench that wouldn't have played a whole lot managed to plug in and be very useful. And it's credit to both the players, but also us sort of examining sort of the
I thought you were
broader
saying it
strokes.
was credit to us then. I was like, I
No,
think
no,
with
no.
people it's credit to you,
Absolutely
but
not. That's not, I
we're
wouldn't
not
take
on that.
credit for anything that we actually deserved. Never mind something that wasn't anything to do with us. But no, I just think the sort of broader strokes of like plugging in certain guys and finding time for everyone, I was quite impressed with, because there's been a previous iteration of French teams where it's been like, oh God, how do we get all these guys in? How do we have enough basketballs for them? But yeah, very impressed.
I think you're right. I think their starting five, as soon as they found it, which I think was the Albacete tournament, it made sense, right? Where it was Nico, Jerome Duran, Audrey Kyle, Remy Bale, and Christophe Carlier. That makes sense. And you can tell they know that's their best five because they are perfectly willing to play half a point under, even though they could budge either Bale out for Sofiane, Carlier out for Belaid, or Duran out for Louis Hedouin. They could do any of those to
They
cover the
kind of they
point.
went to sorry, they went to Sofiane as their first sub in for Bale a handful of times, which I thought was, one was foul trouble, like three in the first quarter, whatever, but there was like a, oh, this is the same thing but a little different. Like if we want to keep most of these guys on the floor but just add a bit of punch. Yeah, it was
You're
pretty
right.
cool.
And then they, I think that's six guys if you count Sofiane, and then they needed to find minutes for Ramané, and I thought they got, I'm going to butcher the one pointer's name, Ibrahim Girassi, something like that. They got enough out of him that I didn't love the idea of bringing Alexi in for either of the bigs and putting another one out there because I feel like you're getting smaller at one spot and less mobile at another, but they were able to make it work. And
You get
yeah,
way more mobile in the
the
spot that you get smaller in, though. Like,
the trade-off ultimately were the rest of their bench, I can take or leave, quite honestly. I was a proponent of them going five on five off and just running goon squad pressing lineup for the minutes where they didn't have their starters in, but they
that was a
neglect.
debate we had where it's like, hey, if you have a sub to make and you want to go five in five, or like not even five, but if you want to go like group subs in your second lineup, do you go press or do you go massive? That was a
No.
fun conversation to have. Also, it's so situationally dependent. Like, But yeah.
But I thought that their coach, as a relatively new coach of their group, I thought did very well with subs with a pretty limited, not limited talent wise, but certainly limited points and combinations wise. I thought he wrung the most out of that, and Nico kind of did the rest for them with very able support from principally Carlier and Audrey Kyle. And yeah, man, that win they got in Albacete over GB in overtime was a little bit artificial because GB were running like lineups for blocks at a time rather than real game rotations.
Yeah, like I played 10 or whatever and was minus a million. Like if we give my minutes back, we'd have been fine.
but they took that win over GB and they got that win over Spain while they're at Albacete. And France do this, man, for whatever reason. They've done it historically before, 2010 being the most obvious example. And I've tried to explain this to people before, and I've explained this to my dad, who's a big rugby fan, and he's convinced it is just a French mentality thing because seemingly any French sports team that gets a bit of a run and kind of gets a sniff of the fact they might actually do quite well, suddenly kicks it up about 10 notches. Whether or not that is true, I don't have enough general sporting knowledge to know,
Yeah, I don't know. They're just like actually great in football, and that's the only other reason I fully follow on an international level.
same thing with able-bodied basketball. I get this. You don't, when you're like top two in the world consistently, you don't really need to be like, oh, we just need to catch a hot streak. But yeah, no, I thought they were impressive, man. And most impressively of everything, I thought they not only did they beat Iran in a very tough game, and Nico kind of out-dueled Sayari in terms of shot making. I thought their most impressive win of the whole tournament was winning the mud-slinging battle against the Netherlands because
Those.
they'd been scoring 60s beforehand, and then they managed to beat the Netherlands 48-43, which, if you told me the scores of that, anonymously as to which way around it was, I would have been like, oh, Netherlands won a game in the 40s, 100%.
You would have, it would
Granted,
have just cut to like the, it would have
48
cut to
points does
the,
seem a bit high for the Netherlands, so maybe that would have tipped my hand.
it would have cut to the Aaron Paul and Breaking Bad. You can't keep getting away with this gif. But yeah.
Yeah, I was impressed by France overall, man. I think my only question with them would be, are they going to be able to, can they keep the lightning in the bottle until, the Paralympics that are a good few months down the road? Because as impressive as they were, this does feel like they're at their peak in terms of winning these games. And I don't know if you can either stay at that level or if you can dip for a few months and then reliably reach that again.
Question about the French participation in the Paralympics. Do you think a home nation should get automatic qualification?
No, because what if they're not very
Question.
good?
What, sorry?
So no, because what if they're not very good?
Yeah, true. But are you happy that France are there?
There was a lot of debate about this in the comments sections of various things, but I am glad France are there now because I think they deserved it. I think had they scuffled their way to a single win and then, snuck past Colombia in an equally underperforming team, and they'd only kind of made it because there was, not a better team there to knock them out in the one game that really mattered, I think I would have been less for it. But I think they've gone from me kind of side-eyeing them as a participant and being like, oh, these guys might get in because the groups are a little imbalanced, to me actually looking at them and being like, these guys could. I mean, is it entirely unreasonable to be like France end up cracking the top four at the Paralympics? I don't
No,
think
it's not completely insane if you
it's a
consider
long
that they
shot,
are.
but I don't think it's out of the question.
No.
And therefore, yeah, I don't think the host nation should get automatic qualification because if anyone can tell me the greatest moment of the UAE's World Championships tournament most recently, then more power to you, because I sure as hell can't remember anything from any of their games.
Yeah. I'm with you. I don't think it should be, well, don't necessarily think it should be automatic, especially if it's eight teams, but I am glad that this French team gets to play in front of, like, playing. I've spoken to guys that have played against a home nation in a Paralympics. I've done it, but, like, well, one didn't play, but was in the GB squad that played against Japan in Tokyo, but there were no fans. But apparently, like, that's a really special thing. So being able to have that is cool, but I mean, it shouldn't really. I don't know if it should be a given, especially if there's only eight teams. Maybe if there were 12, it would be different. But yeah, I don't think it matters, but I'm glad that this group is there because that'll be very cool. And maybe it'll kind of give them a little bump and they'll be even better.
Last question as we transition to the Netherlands, who are one of who like the last relevant team that we've not really spoken about. What do you think about the fact that we two teams qualified through the Europeans and we've now got three of the four repechage teams are European, only disrupted by Canada? It would have been four if Italy had beaten Canada. Because there was a decent amount of chatter about that one and people being like, oh, Europe's so much stronger than the rest of the world. Do you buy any of that?
Paul, don't lie. No, well, there were more European teams in the qualifiers than there were as many European teams as there were other teams in the repechage. So, like, statistically, it was likely that there'd be more European teams qualifying, and that
And that
comes.
they were split two and two in the groups, so they couldn't exactly kill each other into terrible seeds and tough crossovers, right? So,
No, exactly. And how many were in the group that Colombia weren't? I mean, like, yeah, one group. Hold on. I've forgotten the groups. Wasn't one team, wasn't one group France,
So France and
Germany,
France,
Netherlands?
Netherlands, France, Netherlands, Iran, Canada, and then
Oh, sorry.
Italy, Germany, Colombia, Morocco on the other
Oh,
side.
yeah, my bad.
So two and two split between
But
the
yeah,
Europe.
there were two European teams high up in the group that weren't with Morocco and Colombia, so they're guaranteed qualification. Also, the amount of teams from each nation that go to the repechage is based on previous success in world events and stuff,
Right, I didn't know that.
in the same way that automatic qualification is given out based on achievements in the last worlds or whatever. You know what I mean? They always do it like that. So if there wasn't a repechage, this would have been the case anyway. Like, this was just represented in the repechage rather than in straight up qualification, I think. But yeah, I don't really, maybe me being in a European team means I don't care a whole lot, but
I thought it was interesting. I thought it was a bizarre spin. For some people who were watching the games to try and put on things, I didn't really understand what the consequence of it was, but
it
also
is also, sorry, if you look at what it does mean is the fifth best European team is about as strong as the second or third best team in some other nations. Like, but did we know that? Like,
I think that's fair.
there was
But
a brief period, obviously, pre-Japan not quite getting it done, that obviously you could have said Australia, Iran, Japan were about as strong as anyone. So there's a top three that could have, well, that could have put themselves up against the top three in Europe and probably come out on top, but I don't know.
You are right on that one. And it's also like if we're to look again at doing this in 4 years' time ahead of the next Paralympics, how different is it gonna look, right? Iran have been good the last year or so. They're famously up and down with players committing and non-committing. Are they gonna turn up? Turkey are presumably gonna look a little bit stronger down the line as they have more guys coming through. I don't see any challenges coming from the Americas, particularly. Like Argentina have had the same group of players forever, and they're only getting older.
Yeah, Argentina have, like, lost a couple of guys in the last couple of years rather than gained a couple of guys. Yeah.
So is it going to get more Europe-centric? Quite possibly, but also the split of the repechage will probably be different in 4 years' time because the host nation's not from the European zone.
Yes.
So there'll be more spots for America. So yeah, I thought it was an interesting thing to be brought up. And we've probably spent too much time talking about considering we both agree it's an inconsequential
Yeah.
solution to come
Hey,
to.
does this matter? No, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah, okay, let's talk Netherlands because in full disclosure, we did our picks for who was gonna progress. I didn't pick the Netherlands, and friend of the program, or at that particular point in time, friend of half the program,
Enemy of the program.
Mendel up the north came to get me. Not really. I politely explained as to why I didn't think the odds were in their favor. And yeah, man, Netherlands, as happy as I am for them to have made it through and for it to be, did they need success for their, did they need validation for their recent run of success up to the Worlds and whatever? Certainly not from me, if at all. I am really glad they made it. I just, even now, I don't trust the model, man. I just don't like, they could be holding the Paralympic gold medals on the podium and I would be like squinting at it and be like, I just don't really see it. Which is credit to them that they make it work.
Yeah, thank God they don't care what you
Oh
think.
yeah,
But
nor
it's like,
should,
what are they
nor should they.
averaging? 50 something points a game.
Yeah,
Quick
not
maths. No,
stats.
I'm joking. I won't bother. But Mendel averaging 25. Did you see, or have you seen that their second highest per game score? I'll quiz you on this, like, if you don't have it in front of you.
No, good.
No, I will quiz you. Who is their second highest per game scorer?
Every game you watch them, it feels like it would be Matthijs, but then you realize he scores like 6 points in a row to start the game and then doesn't like shoot again until the third quarter, it feels like. Quinton had like one decent game. Also, Iran jumped the hell out of Quinton before he'd even made a shot. I was like, what is going on, man? I am gonna, the off the wall choice is, he just, I was gonna say Patrick de Boer, 'cause he played a lot of minutes, but he only had one like double figure game. Is it Heiss? That's the only other
Points
person.
per game, it is Heiss, because I think he only played in two of their games. So, total
Good.
points, Quinton is second with 35 points in four games.
Nice.
How many did Mendel have?
Well, you said Mendel averaged 25 a game. Was that accurate?
Yeah, there you go, 101 points. But yeah, so Quinton had 35 as their next top scorer, which is a fall off that I don't think many other teams would have. Maybe so, but points per game, he had 8.8, and Heiss had 10.5.
Yeah.
So he only played two games allegedly. But yeah,
I
how did
also
yeah.
think I may be wrong, but I think if Heist did only play two games, I'm almost certain he had 19 points against Colombia and maybe two in the other game he played. That might actually be the score. I'll look that up as we're talking. But yeah, man, I the ne first things first, the Netherlands defense is legit.
Oh yeah, they're
Proof.
so good at, like, I just looked at their stats against France, and Nico Schwanzer had 2 from 10, had like four
Yeah.
points in 25 minutes or something.
Yeah. They are, in a way, their formula makes sense, right? Because their idea is Mendel is their main guy. Mendel will get 20 plus on reasonable efficiency to good efficiency, depending on matchups. I was not thrilled about their early opening to the tournament against Canada, where they were making him post up Dallaire on every offense.
Yeah, when will teams realize that, like, massive low pointers aren't really
Yeah.
mismatches? Like,
But yeah, I mean, and they go above and beyond to take away the primary threat on the other team, right? Which they did successfully in every case that I can think of. And that basically their formula is our best guy will get 20 to 25. We'll take away the easy stuff from their best guy. And they seem to think that their remaining 11 guys on their roster, of which only probably seven other guys actually play meaningful minutes, will cobble together something in the region of 30 to 35 points to support Mendel. And they did it enough times for it to matter. I just don't trust him. And I would, like, if I was coaching that team, I'd be pulling my hair out about where our points were going to come from.
yeah, I've done the
Yeah.
math there, and they averaged 56.5 points a game, and Mendel was averaging 25.5, and
Yeah.
that's just like, hey, it did work because they
Yeah. Yeah.
won three out of their four games, and they won the one that mattered, and they're what, third, fourth in the last Euros? I don't remember.
Yeah, third in the Euros, I believe.
Third in the Euros, fourth in Worlds.
Well,
Like,
yeah.
obviously it works. I think there is something there where it's like you look at that where it's like our guy's gonna have 25 and we will try and keep your main guy to less than that. Like they sell out pretty hard on
Yeah.
like star players on other teams. And defensively they're obviously great because they managed to win games while only scoring 56. Which is impressive. I think it's just like part of it's probably just like we're like, I don't want to watch a game go to 52. Like,
Also, what from what I referenced earlier, all 21 of Heise's points came in one game.
that is so funny. Like, if you score 21 in one game and zero in another game, your points per game total should be 21. That's a hot take. Like, just like take the zeros out, like, take away the outliers in the statistical analysis. I don't mean that. I just think it'd be funny here if he was their top scorer by. No, he wouldn't even have been.
Yeah, no, it's absurd.
He's second if you
Yeah.
take that game away, and he's still second if you don't,
Yeah,
which
it's
is wild, but yeah.
never known anything like it.
Yeah, what I would say about the Netherlands is we're talking about all of this, and you don't really need to do any more than enough to get the job done. So, they'd still qualify if they beat Colombia like 85-39 or 41-39. I was about to say a number lower than 39 for a second.
No, you are right. You are right. I think because they have they seemingly have different guys step up every game around Mendel, and then I know Heiss was their second scorer after Mendel. I think I would say Bellas is their second most reliable guy in terms of game to game output.
Yeah, I like Quinton as well in that team now.
But I think I don't trust. Because if you have a bunch of guys who you can be sure somebody will step up and do some filling in of the gaps, that's also, that's the positive spin on saying there's a bunch of guys who represent gaps that need filling in. And yeah, it's obviously worked for them, so it doesn't matter what I think, but
But yeah, I understand your sort of
I
your
just
doubts.
I wish we've talked about this with club teams as the more times we've done the weekend roundup. I just wish you could nail down, we get this many points from this guy, added to this many points from this guy, added to this many points from this guy, and everybody else is kind of the swing factor. I think that's fine if it's like three
Three
guys that
people,
you
yeah.
can nail your points to. I don't love the model of nailing your points to one guy.
No, that is normal. Like a lot of the good teams you'll see, like in Spain, for example, it's always like, well, this guy has 20, this guy's 18, this guy's 14 a game, and we get twos and sixes from and fours from everyone else.
So it
But
feels a little bit rickety to me, but ultimately they've qualified, and they can. It's similar to what we talked about with Le Cane when we did the French Cup game review, where it's like, how many times do they have to win playing their style before we actually believe that their style works, even though it doesn't look like it should?
it's a weird
And
one.
yeah, maybe we're just terrible at believing what we see is probably most likely to be the moral here. I
Yeah,
think of
maybe
all
we've
their
still
games.
got some baggage.
Yeah. I think of all their games, their win against Iran was the most impressive.
I think so.
Just because I think that obviously, I mean, full disclosure, if you were, whoever's hosted this thing at Antibes, if the big wigs were coming down to see what this wheelchair basketball thing was all about, and that Netherlands Iran game happened to be going on at the time, I don't think you'd be rushing to tell them that was a rematch of the bronze medal game from the World Championships, in terms of drop off of quality from one game to the other.
No.
But yeah, man, I think Netherlands at the very least vanquished that, and I thought they were better than Iran at imposing their style in that game. And yeah, if okay, out of the if we're assuming the teams who were pre-qualified for the Paralympics, which is as we mentioned, GB, Spain, USA, Australia. If we're assuming they are the four best teams by virtue of having qualified first and will occupy the top four spots, who would you say out of the newly qualified four is most likely to have a decent run at cracking the top four?
Germany?
My take.
Probably. Germany, unless France get a real boost from their home team status. What about you? Is that what you're thinking? Is that roughly in line with your thoughts?
Yeah, I think Germany, but I can't really decide which of the four teams I would peg them to possibly knock out of that top four, but that's
Yeah,
obviously
well, I basically answered your question as who do I think the fifth best team in that tournament is? Yeah.
So,
I don't know. Random thing that I forgot to mention, I'm just flicking around stats. That Canada Italian game that we went through already, unbelievably impressed by how well Canada went 4-on-3 once they got the ball out of the hands of the four fives. Like, I think some of their, like, even then they managed to go like 4-on-3, another double, 3-on-2, and their low pointers were just like ping, ping, ping. They'd still air layup. Like,
Canada look very much like a team who has spent years adapting to the fact that people might defend their two best players with five guys.
we spoke about that pre this tournament, and I think, or maybe at the start of this tournament, you were like, how are they? Was it you I was talking to that was like, how are they looking? And I was like, looking like they're really getting stuff out of their guys that aren't four or fives. Like, they're doing a really good job of sort of just hitting the right spots and making all their layups and doing all that stuff, which is like, if you're playing off guys as talented as Pat and Colin and Nick, that's your job.
I thought
But they did as good a job of it as I've seen.
Colin really got what we're gonna refer to as the bench units boost, which is a dramatic spike in level of performance after appearing on bench units in a yet to be released episode. So,
Well, do I get one?
well, apparently not.
No, I was gonna say, where the
I'm
hell
gonna
is it?
say if any guests want to experience the bench units boost, you know where we
I need
are.
to go on someone else's podcast or something. Like, I need to
Well,
like start commenting on like Phil's Twitch or something. Oh yeah, by the way, Phil was doing Twitch watch alongs to some of these games, and I don't remember his Twitch account name, but they were very good. And if you want more wheelchair basketball content, that's your way to go.
I feel like being a white guy with a beard who works in tech, I just can't have a Twitch. Like, I think I do have a Twitch account knocking around, but I can't tick yet another box of like tech bro.
Do you need a Twitch account to watch Twitch streams?
I don't
Like, I have one, so I don't know
know.
if you don't need one, but yeah, I have
No, I
one
don't.
just because Spanish League started streaming on there.
I'm fine now. I've definitely watched Spanish League without being logged in, so now I'm probably fine.
Cool.
Do we have anything else before we get out of here?
No. And I feel like in a tournament that four people win games and there isn't a final, I think handing out a belt would be quite difficult. So,
I would like to give the belt to Christoph Kozorania because he had 35 in Gran Canaria's game when they were missing both KD for the women's ref charge and Alexi for the men's. He had 35 against Juventud or somebody like that.
unbelievable. I just love the idea of, like, most people are like, wow, he's gonna step up, this is great. And I wonder if he was like, right, finally, let's go. I don't know. Like, I don't really know anyone involved that well, but it'd be really funny if he was like,
These guys
I can just do this, right? Like,
finally got these guys out of my way.
him just being like, hey, I can do this next week if you need me to, like, please. But yeah.
very quick touch on the women's ref charge. So,
Which we will
Canada,
actually get into when it's over as
we
well.
will. But as we're recording in the middle of the tournament, it's the end of day two at the moment. Canada, top of the one group with two wins, having just beaten Spain and Japan so far. And Germany, top of the other group with wins over Thailand and Algeria. I would say they are very much the top two teams, which is nice because we both picked them in our predictions. We also picked Australia over Japan, and people have come for us about that one. Nobody was thrilled about that, with the possible exception of any Australians who listened. But yeah, we don't know what we're talking about. I didn't pick the Dutch, and they won despite scoring a total of 12 points in four games. So, yeah, shall we get out of here? And if people are still hanging on our every word, we'll be back soon to talk women's rep charge. And we've got a Euro Cup preview with Colin Higgins in the bag. And we're going to have a couple more Euro Cup previews with a couple of different guests turning up at some point between now and then. So stay ready because there's going to be a content flood and
And if
it's.
you're playing in a Euro Cup 1 or 3 and speak English, please get in touch. I'm joking, right?
And yeah, man, it's business end of the season. There's been this, there's Euro Cups coming up, there's Champs Cup. NBA play-in has been going on the last couple of days. It's just like drowning in basketball stuff, man. I need to just send the wife and kid away for like a long weekend away so I can just mong out.
Ah, sure. It's all nearly over. We'll get back to our holidays soon. Right. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll chat to you next time. Take care. Bye.
Peace.